I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, in terms of tennis quality and sporting drama, I think we might have just had one of the all-time great 24-hour periods on day five of this US Open, if we incorporate a little bit of last night as well. We would be able to say that more confidently if we had the greater memory bank of David Law among us. But alas, it is just myself and Matt Roberts, because the excitement of the greatest ever 24-hour period, to be confirmed by David's more extensive memory bank, has rather got to Mr. Law. And I spent all day today speculating on the Tennis Podcast WhatsApp group about how pumped Law would be for this podcast. It turns out, too pumped.
He's been struck down by something, possibly too much pumpness.
Yes. It's an affliction. It's an affliction David struggles with daily, and we wish him well. Like Dan Evans told us in his post-match victory after his come from two sets behind victory in a fifth set tiebreak win over Alexei Popperin today, when he was asked about his next round with Daniil Medvedev. Oh, I need to lie down first. So Dan Evans and David Law and maybe the rest of Birmingham's inhabitants are having a lie down, and it is left to myself and Matt to pick over the bones of, am I being hyperbolous, Matt, one of the great 24-hour periods?
I don't think you are. That was really, really special today. It looked like a blockbuster day on paper, didn't it? You know, we had this stat that it was the first time since they changed the seeds to 32 seeds at Slams rather than 16 that none of the top 20 seeds had lost in either round one or round two. Only Jennifer Brady, who pulled out of the tournament, wasn't there. This was such a high-profile lineup, and you just lined up the matches. And Simona Halep said she was looking over the order of play at breakfast, and every match was a semi-final. I loved that image. And they all delivered. They really, really did, you know. And I think we sort of wondered the other week, didn't we, whether sort of other tournaments would do an annual tribute to Manic Monday at Wimbledon now that that's gone. And this felt like the day of this year's US Open, obviously a round earlier than Manic Monday, but this is as good a round three as I can remember. It just all came together.
How many matches would you put into the debate for match of the tournament from the last 24 hours? What are your submissions?
Let's talk through them. Anisimova Pliskova last night, definitely. Alcaraz Tsitsipas.
So Anisimova Pliskova was a deciding set tiebreak.
Correct.
Tsitsipas Alcaraz, deciding set tiebreak.
Yeah, I didn't see a lot of Dan Evans, Alexei Popperin.
I did, deciding set tiebreak, corker.
I think Halep Rybakina was superb. I would throw that one in.
So what do we, that's four?
That's four already. And then, you know, Kerber Stevens and Muguruza Azarenka, I don't think were quite at that level, but they were excellent matches, which really lived up to their hype. So, yeah, I think we've had six amazing matches in the last 24 hours.
And we record with Danielle Collins versus Aryna Sabalenka still to come, Jabeur Mertens still to come, Osaka Fernandez and Rublev against Tiafo, which David Law has picked as an upset. I mean, if that prediction comes off, I don't know what state he'll be in tomorrow. TBC, whether he'll ever appear on the podcast again if Francis Tiafoe beats Andre Rublev tonight. So, oh my goodness, I don't know where to start. I felt sure at one stage today we would start with Rybakina Halep. Then I felt sure we'd start with Muguruza Azarenka. But I'm just going to go with what's most present in my mind, because I got back tonight and I think it was 5-5 in the fifth set between Carlos Alcaraz, the 18-year-old Spaniard who played Rafael Nadal, his hero, on his 18th birthday at the Madrid Masters earlier this year and was presented with cake despite losing, which is a tennis thing, a weird tennis thing that we very much enjoy. So I arrived home with he and third seed Stefanos Tsitsipas locked at 5-5 in the fifth set. I'd been listening to the radio coverage in the car. I didn't have enough 4G left to get the Prime Video coverage in the car because I have used up so much 4G watching Prime Video in various car journeys. So I was listening to it on the radio and walked through the door, greeted excitedly by Billie Jean, walked through into the living room and found Matt watching Diego Schwartzman against Alexander Molchan, and Schwartzman was two sets to love up, and I was about to eject him from from the building, from the podcast, from all of our lives. But it turns out it was a sit down and it was merely a brief drop in.
I was stitched up.
because we did immediately head back to Alcaraz and Tsitsipas, and we weren't disappointed by the remainder of the match, nor were we disappointed by any of the match up until that point. We had Jim Courier in the commentary box for it, and he's a very measured voice, isn't he? He's kind of seen it all. I don't think he's into overhyping players, and he was all aboard the Carlos Alcaraz train today. And how on earth could, I mean, all of New York is aboard the Carlos Alcaraz train. How on earth could you possibly not be on board unless you're Stefanos Tsitsipas? And even he sounded a little bit on board.
Yeah, he said he's never seen anyone hit the ball as hard as Alcaraz. He was really stunned by what Alcaraz produced today. And honestly, so was I. I mean,
and you're the earliest of early Alcaraz adopters.
Do you know, a great thing has happened. I now get tweeted, I now get atted on Twitter when Alcaraz does stuff. People are like, Matt, that only used to happen when Kuzmova lost. It now happens when Alcaraz does great
things.
Do
you think it'll be happening in 10 years' time when he's going for Grand Slam number 21?
Do you know? I hope so. But yeah, look, I have been a massive fan of Alcaraz for a while, and I just didn't think he had this level in him yet. This seemed way better than anything he's produced before. And, you know, he's 6-3, 3 love up in this match. And as you say, Jim Courier cannot believe his eyes. And to be fair to him, he's saying this is not sustainable. There is going to come a time where there's going to be a drop off.
Did it have a Musetti Djokovic two sets up, retire for the fans feel about it? That is what Musetti said of that retirement in press afterwards. I did it for the fans.
No, because Djokovic wasn't there. I think when Musetti was two sets up, his problem was it was Novak Djokovic was down the other end. Tsitsipas has been vulnerable in this tournament. I think a little drop off from Alcaraz still gave him a chance to win the match. But honestly, in that first set, he was ripping forehands. He broke Tsitsipas's serve four times out of his first six service games. And that is something that really, I think, separates him. You know, if you look at Nadal, Murray, Djokovic, what they've got is an incredible return of serve. And I think Alcaraz is in that mold as a player. He is going to create so many opportunities on other players' serves in his career. He's got a great return.
His own serve is massively improved, though, hasn't it, in a very short space of time. It's never going to be his biggest weapon, but it's no longer just get the ball in court.
No, absolutely. He's added some pace to it. I think he only hit two or three aces today. He can definitely up that. But goodness, he just played so well, and he just has such a good sense of how to use his game. You know, that is a thing that I think can take a lot of time. It can sometimes never come for a player, to be honest. And yet Alcaraz seems to understand his game. The number of drop shots he hit at really key moments and just well timed. You know, he sensed Tsitsipas was back.
Senses the moment, doesn't he? Senses exactly when to use the crowd. This is going to seem like a really facile comparison, but he and Emma Raducanu, there are so many similarities for me in that sense, the way they connect with people, that just sixth sense for occasion and shot selection and all the sort of impalpable things about tennis that matter so much. What Greg would call it. Greg does call it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think, you know, I called it a changing of the guard who's supposed to change the guard on Twitter. I think there's something there's something about him doing this to Tsitsipas. You know, has been the guy. You know, it feels a bit like it feels bigger than when sort of Dimitrov started losing to those guys, because by that point we'd sort of figured out who Dimitrov was. Tsitsipas, look, it's one result. Tsitsipas has still had a great season and will do great things, but it just seemed like Alcaraz is a level up. Honestly, he's at 18 and he can do that. He's so good, and just feels really significant tonight, him doing this to Tsitsipas.
Can he back it up? He's got a fourth round against, all due respect here, Peter Goyovchik, who again, I'm going to feebly say, all due respect, but has only had to himself beat Henry Laxinen to beat the fourth round. So you know, there is the whole, you know, but he's made it to the fourth round, so he must be in good form thing. Well, you know, in terms of the players he's beaten, it's nothing compared to Alcaraz.
No, indeed. I think Alcaraz did have a bit of a leg issue towards the end of the match. He got some treatment after the fourth set, which he lost 6-love, and he wasn't really pushing off on his serve. And yet, it didn't seem to affect the rest of his play. What he lost on his serve, he seemed to gain on his ground strokes in that final set. He was still hitting the ball with such force after several hours on court. I think there's a sort of physical recovery, and then there's just backing up that moment and the sort of elation of it all. You do sometimes see a come down, and you know, maybe you want another big opponent, you know, where you're not the favorite in that next match. You're suddenly going to be the favorite.
It'll be a very good point.
Interesting to see how he copes with it, but he does seem pretty grounded, and he's got a very good attitude. You know, it's lazy to do Nadal comparisons, but
how can you not? Though
how can you not? The sort of attitude-wise does seem pretty similar.
The vibes with the team and the box are good as well, aren't they? I mean, my favorite energy of the day, and this was a hotly contested competition was Juan Carlos Ferrero, his proud father vibes with a very dewy eye when Carlos Alcaraz got over the line. I mean,
he's really taken Alcaraz under his wing, hasn't he? He's, you know, Alcaraz is set up at his academy, and they've been together for quite a few years now. You know, Alcaraz is only 18.
He's invested long term in him.
He has, totally. And yeah, just to see it all pay off today must be emotional for him.
And he was somebody that people considered a clay courter that had the second best result of his career at the US Open on hard courts, reached world number one, didn't he, by reaching that final. So, oh, goodness me, he's exciting. Yeah, we need to not make it, and this also applies to Omar Raducanu, I think, although we're all going to break this rule straight away. We need to not make it about whether he wins the next match and what he ends up doing in this tournament, because this is enough. He's done the thing. He's made the statement.
Yeah.
And yet we all desperately hope and will be mega hyping his prospects against Peter Goyovchik in the next round. Right then.
Well, just to say, I think the other notable aspect of this match was how much the crowd was on Tsitsipas's back. I mean, really, there has been...
So it wasn't just positivity towards Alcaraz, because there was a lot of that. They love him. They've gone with him. But it was specifically negative towards Tsitsipas.
It was, yeah. I mean, there was not quite silence, but very quiet when Tsitsipas won games. He went over for a fairly innocent chat with the umpire at one point and got booed. He went off the court for one of his bathroom breaks and got booed. Interestingly, he was only gone for, I think, about 3.5 minutes today for that bathroom break, rather than the 7-8 minutes that he's been averaging. But this is a shift I didn't see coming and has been very sudden with Tsitsipas. You know, I've watched Tsitsipas on the Rod Laver Arena against Federer, and the crowd have loved him. I've seen him at Roland Garros, and he's been adored. He's been a popular player with crowds.
Is this the power of Andy Murray?
I think because, if Andy Murray hadn't done what he'd done,
because Zverev brought up the issue in Cincinnati and actually made a far stronger allegation than Andy Murray ever did. He just didn't do it via a comedy tweet about Jeff Bezos.
And he did it in a press conference.
Yeah.
I suppose he did have a little word with the umpire during the match, but Murray's was a lot more visible. It was at a grand slam. It's going to get more attention.
And it does seem like, from what I gathered from Jim Courier today in our Prime Video coverage, it's really gained traction in the US. He said, look, everyone in this crowd knows about Lugate.
But I also think some of it is self-inflicted from Tsitsipas. You know, I think he's not done himself a lot of favours.
No, and you said to me earlier, he's not going to pull this back, this situation with whereas Medvedev's
self-awareness turned it round in that tournament and he'd won them over by the end of it. That is lacking with Tsitsipas.
It's a tricky one, isn't it? Because on one hand, he's clearly upset by it and it hurts him, and he's a young man you'd be very hard of heart not to just feel general human sympathy for a young man being booed by thousands of people. But on the other hand, actions have consequences and there are behaviours within his control that could affect and influence that reaction that he's not paying any attention to or is unable to pay attention to. So it's a very tricky one with him, and it will be interesting how this affects him going forward. That is one of the six contenders dealt with. Matt, what case would you like to make next for match of the day, of the tournament, of the year?
Shall we go to Halep Rybakina?
Yes.
Is this too much jumping around?
No, not at all. No. We'll go where the wind takes us today,
okay,
Matt. It's that
great
kind of a day. This was really good, isn't it? And this was actually the ultimate match, which I felt like could only disappoint, because I was reminded in my research about it that their last meeting was in the Dubai final last year, and it was officially voted the match of 2020. Mm. I know 2020 was a curtailed season with fewer contenders for that title, but it was 7-6 in the third, won by Simona Halep. Truly an epic, and not just in terms of drama, in terms of quality as well. Today's rematch could only disappoint. Even if it was a great match, it had to be less good than that match, right? Well, I think it might have been as good as that match, sort of, maybe, at least close.
Close, for sure. And I think it had a higher peak moment. You know, maybe the overall sustained excitement wasn't quite what that 2020 Dubai final had. But I will remember the first set tiebreak from this match for a long, long time.
18 and a half minutes.
Was it? Wow. Mm. And there were 10 set points in the tiebreak. Halep had 7 and Rybakina had 3. It was just back and forth. I think you called it a tiebreak of Shakespearean proportions.
I did. Definitely something that Alan Partridge would say. But it came to me in the moment, Matt. As I said, it's a day where you go where the wind takes you.
Yeah, there was just this theatre to it. And it had been a strange set. It had been, you know, Rybakina led, Halep came back, Rybakina led, Halep came back, Halep served for it, Rybakina broke to take it to a tiebreak. And then the tiebreak was the same with just these shifts in momentum, and you didn't know who was going to win. And the way they match up against each other is so interesting, especially now, actually, because Halep's really trying to be more and more aggressive. And yet she's up against Rybakina, who, you know, the term easy power just doesn't... it's the perfect description, but it also doesn't feel enough. It's so easy, power.
It's easy everything, isn't it, for Rybakina? Easy. She takes everything on the chin without... It's different to Pliskova's sort of seeming perceived unbotheredness somehow. Mm. It's more serene.
Kvitova.
Yes, more Kvitova. It's a serenity rather than a sort of detachment.
Yes.
Or sort of languid. Well, I mean, she is languid, but yeah, the serenity, that's the best word for it. She's, her energy is just so calming, even at a sort of 17 all in a tiebreak.
The most stressful tiebreak of the tournament. Yeah, and then Halep has a very different energy. She's,
that's why it works, isn't it?
Absolutely. I think it really, really works.
They took concurrent medical timeouts. It was all just in sync to create an interesting match. I think Rybakina, we saw a lot of revolting close-ups of one of Rybakina's feet.
Daniela Hantikova was commentating, and I think she was actually about to eat something and decided not to. Mm. On the basis of seeing those feet.
Wise, I would say.
Yeah. I mean, she's got a little bit of a close match problem, Rybakina. You know, she lost
she's
a very...
She's not a front runner.
She lost a very close one at Roland Garros, didn't she, to Pavlyuchenkova. And then I remember at the Olympics, her last two matches there, the semifinals and the bronze medal match, she was the better player in both matches against Bencic and against Svitolina, and yet she didn't win. And I thought at times she was the better player today. She was up a break in the third set. As you said, front runner, closing. She's got a few issues there. But gosh, it's nice to see Halep back. It's such a shame she had to miss 3 massive tournaments over the summer. But she said she's feeling much better, and she's into the fourth round at the US Open for the first time in 5 years. She actually said on the court 3 years, and then in her press conference, in her first answer, she said, actually, it's 5 years. My brother just texted me and told me that I got it wrong.
That is definitely what brothers are for, in my experience. I mean, maybe it takes the pressure off having sort of a plaster cast on your thigh. I don't know. I mean, it's an interesting one. There are situational parallels between Simona Halep and Garbiñe Muguruza. Mm. Both of them have won Open and Wimbledon. It's all off the cuff. It's that wind again, Matt. both of them have won a Wimbledon title and a French Open title, and had decent results also at the Australian Open, slightly more so Halep, I suppose, than Muguruza. But they've also by far had their least success Grand Slam-wise at the US Open, for not necessarily all identical reasons. But I think there are a lot of parallels there. They usually come into the US Open having expended most of their energy at some point earlier in the summer, and maybe don't have the physical tennis energy, don't have the mental energy to cope with New York, whatever it might be. But it feels different for both of them this year. And definitely for Muguruza. She just looks so mentally fresh, Muguruza.
Yeah.
And it was overall a great contest with Azarenka. I know the third set sort of quality-wise maybe wasn't quite there. I thought I saw bits and bobs of the opening set, which was, there was some, I looked up after about 40 minutes and it was 2-2, you know.
It was a battle, you know, sort of a heavyweight WTA clash with just both players refusing to give an inch. You know, they've got quite similar games. You know, they're both heavy hitters from the baseline. And yeah, I think Muguruza's serve really fell apart in the second set. She got broken multiple times. But otherwise, I thought it was a very good performance, picking up on how she's done in the first round and the second round here. She had a really tough draw. And just as you say, there is a different energy about her in New York this year. I think she's really put pressure on herself in the past to do well in New York, because why shouldn't she? You know, there's no reason why New York and Muguruza should not work. And I think she's just trusted where she is, trusted her game, trusted her preparation. She just seems very chilled and relaxed, I suppose, and yeah, fresh, and it's really paying off. She now plays Barbora Krejcikova.
Yes, please.
They have split their matches this year, 1-1 head to head. Muguruza won the Dubai final and Krejcikova won just a couple of weeks ago in Cincinnati. And Muguruza was interesting on Krejcikova. She said, "I can feel the confidence in her shots. You know, something has changed in Krejcikova since she won the French Open. And Muguruza, as an opponent, feels like she can tell the difference, you know, just the way Krejcikova is hitting the ball." And she won very easily today. She's won, I think, 28 of her last 31 matches.
P.S. This is her US Open main draw debut.
Yeah, she's failed to qualify a number of times and making her main draw debut, and she's just breezed into the fourth round. The transformation in, I mean, less than a year, really, for her is
bonkers.
Yeah, we've said it before, but astonishing.
Incidentally, Simona Halep faces Alina Svitolina in the next round. Svitolina won pretty handily against Daria Kazatkina, 4-2 earlier. And those two have epic battles, don't they?
They do, yeah. I remember one in Rome, one in Doha. They're a match that shouldn't work, because they're quite similar and you don't quite get that contrast of styles, but it really does work, Svitolina Halep. And actually on these slightly faster courts, I think it could be even better.
We have just had walk out onto the Arthur Ashe Stadium, or a few minutes ago, they're at 2-1 on serve in the opening set. Naomi Osaka against another 18-year-old, Layla, she's one of those players where suddenly her middle name is...
Annie, right?
Layla Annie Fernandez, like Bianca Vanessa Andreescu and Holger Vitus Gerulaitis, what's it, Rune. Can't remember. There was another name. It's like, it would be like sort of seeing Andrew Baron Murray in the draw all of a sudden. Anyway, 18-year-old Layla Fernandez from Canada is currently 2-1 up on Naomi Osaka. And the winner of this one takes on Angelique Kerber in the fourth round, because Kerber got the better of, and I'm going on the basis of David Law commentary on the radio earlier that I was listening to in the car, beat a pretty much top of her game Sloane Stephens today. And that is a fearsome prospect. Anybody that's able to beat, you know, the narrative with Stephens is it's all about how she plays, all about whether she produces her best, whether she turns up. Well, she turned up today. David, I think, described her as just casually being brilliant, in just casually knocking off sublime forehands. Won the opening set 7-5 and then 6-2, 6-3, the next two sets. For Kerber, which sound, I think, more one-sided than they were. It was a very competitive match. And Kerber, who I continue to hear retirement rumours about,
still,
is just, ridiculous. I mean, she looks world-beating.
Well, she pretty much is. She's lost two matches since, I think, the French Open, and both of those were against Ash Barty in the Wimbledon semi-final and the Cincinnati semi-final. She won the tournament in Bad
Homburg.
Bad Homburg.
Turns out Bad Homburg was sort of the turning point of Angelique. We all should have paid more attention to Bad Homburg, I think, is the moral of this story. The turning point of Angelique Kerber's what was to be retirement year, if rumours are to be believed. I should say those aren't, you know, those aren't from any nailed on sources or anything, but it's just one of those things that's circulating around in the tennis atmosphere.
It's an incredible transformation. It's just like she's woken up, you know. She can play like this. This is the Angelique Kerber that we should see, and it's especially impressive considering the records she's had against Stevens. You know, just as you say, Stevens, it can all be about her. She can beat kind of anyone when she's on, but she especially beats Angelique Kerber. She'd won their last five matches. It had been several years since Kerber had got a win, and to drop the first set and to turn that match around is so impressive. I thought she broke down the Stevens backhand in the final set. She's just targeted it and got some errors from it, and yeah, her game is in such a good place. She slept at the Billie Jean King National Tennis Center the other night.
On the night
she was supposed to play on...
Oh, Kalinina.
Kalinina.
Yeah, which she ended up playing yesterday, a day delayed.
Yeah, yeah, she posted on Instagram a photo of her in the gym on a makeup bed that they got out for her. She slept there. Played the next day.
Oh, this is starting to sound like
it's the sort of thing.
The sort of thing that will be reenacted in a dramatization for you know a TV movie at some stage in the future,
or a tennis relived,
or a tennis relived.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
So Kerber against potentially Naomi Osaka in round four. I'll just let you all sit with that prospect for a moment. Let's return to the men's draw and Dan Evans and another fifth set tiebreak win over Alexei Popperin, who has more game than I realised. I knew he had game and knew he had a big serve, big forehand, and a lot of hunger about him. But for some reason, he's never been quite as much in the conversation about that generation of players as some of the others. And okay, he hasn't had the results. He's never really done anything big at Masters level, has he? Won his first title earlier this year at an event in Singapore, which was a big moment for him. I remember how pumped he was to win that, even though it was one of those tournaments that didn't have a glittering field and happened right after the Australian Open and was happening in the middle of the night our time, and we reported the result but hadn't paid any particular attention to it. But I noted, you know, just how massive a deal it seemed for him and his career. But yeah, he has so much game. He's one of this new breed of tennis players that's extremely tall but moves incredibly well. This lightness on his feet and enables him to run around his shots and hit just completely improbable forehands, get that incredible forehand into play. And on these quick courts, that forehand and his serve is just doing massive damage. He's got good hands. He's not afraid to come to the net. He's a really good all-round player, Alexei Popperin. And Dan Evans came out completely pumped today, really sharp. I think it was the third point of the match that he pummeled a backhand at the throat of Alexei Popperin at close range. And I'm so sorry that David Law isn't here to describe that for you in a Brummie-tinged accent, because it deserves that. But it was such a glorious moment to start that match, wasn't it? A delicious scene setter.
Yes, our WhatsApp group was alive when that happened. In fact, I think I got a message about it before I'd seen it. You know, I think occasionally the stream is a bit behind. David had hit send on that message immediately.
And Alexei Popperin returned the favour, I think,
in the
fourth set, about 3 hours later.
Yeah.
And Dan Evans laughed afterwards and sort of nodded his approval at doing that, which I thought was a glorious reaction. But I loved the thought that he'd been stewing on it and looking for a payback opportunity for 3 hours. It was the third point of the match. Yeah, Popperin won the opening two sets. The first set was really competitive. Dan Evans had the break, was leading 4-3, and Popperin broke. I think he had a run of 6 games in a row, broke him consecutively, and just was really pumping up the crowd. Just showed a real steel and ruthlessness that I'd never seen before, and really continued that momentum into the second set. And goodness me, Dan Evans was just hanging tough, hanging by his fingernails, and he wanted this so much. He's reached one Grand Slam fourth round, and you just get the feeling with Dan, he sort of hinted at it in press conferences, but he's disappointed by his Grand Slam results.
Oh,
big time. And I think it's been massively on his mind this year. He's beaten Djokovic. He's got himself to a career high ranking. He's seeded at Slams. He's, you know, regularly featuring in Masters tournaments. But his Grand Slam results have been a big disappointment. His best Grand Slam result was that sole fourth round appearance at the Australian Open 2017 pre-ban.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is significant, because I think it's sort of two separate careers in his mind, really. To, you know, he's a different guy to what he was back then, and I just think this is massive for him. And there was a Djokovic like defiance in that third set. I am not letting this go. He's had some tough draws in various different places. Alexei Popperin, as I've said, brilliant player, but unseeded Alexei Popperin to reach the second week of a slam is a decent draw. He's seeded 24th at the moment. Mm. You could be facing Novak Djokovic in the third round as the 24th seed. He wasn't. This was the moment. He wasn't going to let it get taken away from him.
Mm.
And but even with that, he didn't run away with it. There was no collapsing and folding from Alexei Popperin. He had to have it wrenched from him, and there was just the slightest sag from him in the deciding set tiebreak. I thought just the slightest bit of, oh my God, even that wasn't good enough. And it was quite a one-sided tiebreak in the end, but yeah, it was such a contest, just two real competitors.
I think maybe it's an underrated aspect of Dan Evans, actually, his fight. You know, I think when I immediately think of Dan Evans, I think of his nice tennis. And yeah, often nice tennis doesn't go with scrappy fighter. You know, I think it's kind of the mistake that's been said about Federer a lot of the time, you know, that it all comes easy to him. But Federer's a player with a lot of fight, really, and you see that sometimes, but you always see it with Dan Evans. And we saw it today, and he played an inspired fifth set tiebreak, didn't he? He was just brilliant in that closing stage of that match. And yeah, just it feels like he's proved something to himself. Yeah, because this is very similar to his third round draw at Wimbledon. You know, I think Alexei Popperin is in a similar sort of place to Sebastian Korda. You know, a young guy with big weapons, but you know, unseeded. Evans, maybe not the favourite, but maybe just, or 50-50. It's a match he would expect himself to win. I think that's the important part. And he was really gutted with how he played against Korda at Wimbledon. I think Korda played well, but Evans didn't quite have it that day. And it looked like it was going to be the similar sort of story today. So for him to turn that round is a massive deal. And yeah, just as you say, the fact that he's now equaled his best run at a slam, the fact that came pre-ban, he sees himself as a better tennis player, a better person, a better everything. So I'm sure that was nagging at him, that his best ever result in a slam was actually the old version of himself. So to do that today is really, really significant.
And he now gets a pop at the second seed, Daniil Medvedev, who definitely did not play a deciding set tiebreak today. Love 4-3 against 35-year-old Pablo Andujar. So the movement lives to fight another day. Dan Evans said he was asked about playing Medvedev in his on-court interview afterwards. And he had this sort of give me a chance look about him. But he said, look, I'll have to play like I did in that tiebreak for 3 hours, and then maybe I'll have the tiniest chance. He knows what the task is, but he's also going to try and be a disruptor, isn't he? And mm-hmm. I think that's going to be fun. Even if it's one-sided, I think it'll be fun.
Yeah, it will be fun to watch. He'll bring it. He'll come at Medvedev, and
we love to see it.
We do. I think Medvedev will have too much, but I want to see it.
We have Diego Schwartzman against Botic van der Zand Schulp.
He won.
Were you about to say some things about Botic van der Zand Schulp's win? Because
last time,
if either of us is going to, it will be you.
No, I just didn't know the result. I knew it was 2 sets to 1.
3-6, 6-love, 6-2, 6-2 over Facundo Bagnis. That match is available to watch on replay on Prime Video, Matt, should you wish to. Schwartzman beat Alexander Molchan in the match that you were very briefly absorbed in earlier. 3 straight sets for him. So Schwartzman against van der Zand Schulp, Alcaraz against Gojovcic, and it will be the final fourth rounder from that half of the draw is 2 opponents yet to be decided, because we have Roberto Bautista Agut against Felix Auger-Aliassime, currently in progress on Louis Armstrong Stadium. Auger-Aliassime, I think, had the break in the first set last time I checked, and Tiafoe and Rublev, goodness knows what time they're getting on court, because the night session started late. It is still on serve in the opening set of Osaka Fernandez, so that's not going quickly. So, settle in for Tiafoe Rublev in warnings that'll be very out of date by the time that you're listening to this podcast news.
Well, I was
another
say,
submission, Matt.
I was well from last night. You know,
I was getting
you
there.
You were going there.
Mm.
Okay.
I was gonna run through tomorrow's schedule on which Karolina Pliskova will feature, and then I was going to ask you to explain why.
Great.
Professional presenter, Matt.
I shouldn't have doubted you.
So, folks, tomorrow's schedule. We are starting. David never makes you feel terrible, does he? Come back, David. Come back. Right. Tomorrow's schedule, the Arthur Ashe Stadium starts at midday, 5 p.m. UK time, with Petra Kvitova against Maria Sakkari. Yes, please.
Yes, please.
Then it's Novak Djokovic against Kei Nishikori. Yeah. Bless you, Kay. But,
Well, look, I said it at the start of the tournament.
Anything can happen.
Anything can happen.
Even that? Love and two at the Olympics.
Yeah. It was stark at the Olympics.
Yeah. Anything can happen. It's why we love sport. Do tune in for Nishikori against Djokovic. The night session on the Arthur Ashe Stadium is Ash Barty against Shelby Rogers. And then it's Zverev against Jack Sock.
Poor Shelby Rogers. I think she's lost to Barty at least four times already this year.
This year?
Oh, yeah. She kept drawing her at the start of the season.
Of all the people to keep drawing.
Yeah.
That's rough. Because kind of aside from that, she's had a really good season,
yeah.
Hasn't she? Yeah. Louis Armstrong Stadium tomorrow. I think this is where we'll be kicking off our... All the matches are available, but this is where we'll be kicking off our main channel coverage with Bianca Andreescu against the lucky loser, Greet Minnan. She's into the third round of a slam for the first time. Andreescu, incidentally, did win in straight sets yesterday, as we recorded, I think, live on the podcast. Mm-hmm. And that was her first straight sets win in more than 3 months. So can she score another one tomorrow? She's followed by Belinda Bencic against Jessica Pegula.
That's a yes, please.
That's a yes, please. As is, I think, Gael Monfils against Jannik Sinner.
Yes,
yes,
definitely.
Yes, yes, please. Night session on Armstrong. Lloyd Harris against Denis Shapovalov. That could be interesting. He could test Shapovalov, I think.
I think that's a yes, please.
Yeah.
They played earlier this season, and I think that was a third set tiebreak, Harris won.
Are we approaching the territory of looking up the most ever deciding set tiebreaks at a US Open?
Do you know, that's a very good shout. There have been a lot, haven't there?
Mm. Don't want to jinx it because, you know, we want to see more of them. I love a deciding set tiebreak.
I do. I particularly love a deciding set tiebreak to 10.
Yes.
At
yes.
The Australian
agree.
Open.
Agree.
But I still love them.
And then Vera Gracheva against Anastasia Pavlyuchenkova is last up on Armstrong. Grandstand is Ilya Ivashka of being talked about on the tennis podcast fame. Against Matteo Berrettini, then Annette Contaveit against Iga Swiatek. That could be a yes, please.
Yeah.
I know we're a little bit worried about Swiatek, as discussed yesterday, and Contaveit won in the land last week, didn't she? She's on great form. Cleveland, Matt, Cleveland.
Sorry, it took me a moment. What?
Then, prepare yourself, Matt, it is Karolina Pliskova against Ila Tomljanovic. Tell us, Matt, about how Karolina Pliskova booked her place in the third round.
Well, before today, this was the match of the tournament by far, against Amanda Anisimova. Karolina Pliskova won in a deciding set tiebreak, saving a match point along the way. And I think it was match of the tournament for its quality. It was just really high quality throughout. It sort of reminded me of a Venus Williams Petra Kvitova match at Wimbledon a few years ago. Just sort of first strike tennis, very few breaks of serve, all the sets heading to a sort of crucial moment right at the end. And honestly, it was so nice to see Amanda Anisimova playing well.
I feel like we need to caveat all of this lovely analysis with the fact that you have a backhand fetish.
I do.
And are almost a bit weird about the Amanda Anisimova backhand. He dreams about it.
I mean, it's unbelievable.
It is. It's a lovely backhand.
But there was a moment in the third set, the 5-all game, Anisimova serving, which I think it's one of the holds of the tournament. She was under so much pressure and she saved a break point with a backhand down the line.
Kenin-esque.
Lifted her arms aloft and it was punctuated by such great crowd noise. It was really good atmosphere. I was worried I was going to wake you and Billie Jean up in that moment. But, you know, and I thought it was nice for Anisimova as well because she had that little breakthrough at Indian Wells, didn't she? 3 years ago now, when she beat Kvitova, but she's not really had a moment since then at home in the US. And this was kind of the first one. And she was brilliant. I mean, really, she played. It might be the best I've seen Anisimova play. Certainly, it's the best I've seen since Roland Garros in 2019. She played so well, as did Pliskova.
That's so nice to hear because my heart breaks for her story, really, and losing her father just over a year ago, was it? A year and a half ago? Was it before the US Open?
Just before the US Open was it 2 years ago? 2019.
So, okay, good news overall for Amanda Anisimova, and it sounds like a brilliant win for Karolina Pliskova. She faces Tomljanovic tomorrow, then it's Basilashvili against Opelka last up on the grandstand court. You've got court number 17 with Andrea Seppi holding up the anti-movement against Oscar Otter of being beaten by Andy Murray at Wimbledon fame. Then,
remember in a listener question special when someone asked us who the next Aslan Karatsev could be?
Oh, are you going Oscar Otter? Well, hang on. Well, Aslan Karatsev is still in the draw.
I know, yeah. But Oscar Otter has come into our consciousness in the last couple of months, hasn't he?
And let's call Andrea Seppi for a place in the fourth round a good draw.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Sara Cerebes-Tormo is next up against Emma Raducanu.
Yes, please.
Yes, please. Is she going to win that? I can't separate the hype from the reality. I'm on the train. I might be driving the train. trying to separate head from heart. I do think she could win. I really do.
Oh, for sure she could. I think Cerebes-Tormo is probably a hands down most improved player of the year. Maybe Badosa would rival her. Those two Spaniards have been just brilliant this season.
It somehow seems more improbable for Sara Cerebes-Tormo though, because she's got less game. The weapons aren't there. She seems to have done it with the same game. She hasn't developed any big weapons or...
Yeah, no, totally. She will test every aspect of Raducanu. You know, I think we're in this incredible sort of learning phase about Raducanu, aren't we? But we'll learn a lot tomorrow because basically Cerebes-Tormo doesn't play a match under 2 hours. She only plays epic. She has a sliced backhand, which not that many players have. You know, it's very sharp and knifed. I remember she played Ash Barty at the Olympics. She took Barty out at the Olympics.
Well, the winner of that would face the winner of Barty against Shelby Rogers. Mm. So most likely Ash Barty.
Yeah. So look, Cerebes-Tormo is another level up from the matches Raducanu's played this tournament. So fascinating. I would probably just lean Cerebes-Tormo.
It's not ludicrous hype to suggest that Raducanu can win. Thank you, Matt.
Given the level she's played at, it surely isn't.
Last singles match tomorrow. Well, not chronologically last. Last on my list. Last on court number 17 is Aslan Karatsev against Jensen Brooksby, who we watched beat Taylor Fritz last night in just such a fun match. Yeah, he's great. I know. I always sort of, my instinct is to be a bit sniffy about Brooksby because he's such sort of the in vogue player to be like, oh, have you seen Jensen Brooksby? He's fun, isn't he? But he is undeniably fun.
Definitely, he's got quite a quirky game. You sort of don't see the shots coming, and slightly odd technique, slightly different energy about him. And yeah, kind of just as we were saying, Alcaraz beating Tsitsipas is like a, you know, a sort of generational thing. Brooksby beating Fritz feels a bit, you know, there's Brooksby and Korda, young Americans who are sort of younger than Fritz and Tiafoe, you know, that new American and probably Opelka as well, you know, they're kind of all coming now.
Well, look, if tomorrow's half as good as today, we're in for a treat. And it promises a lot. It promises to be pretty similar today. Hopefully Osaka, as we wrap up, is leading 6-5. She's 7 for the set, 30 love. But it looks like Leila brackets Annie Fernandez has given her a good game. The crowd look pretty absorbed in it. Incidentally, the crowds do seem to be increasing as the tournament goes on. It felt really full for that Alcaraz Tsitsipas match, perhaps not right up at the top. But the atmosphere is only growing, which is really wonderful to see. So Naomi Osaka is a setup. There is still so much more tennis to come. We hope that David will be back with us tomorrow. He's been missed. Get well soon, David.
Better, David.
Billie Jean is sending vibes. Billie Jean is sponsored, incidentally, by Billie Jean King. We all have our sponsors, Zeus, Scousel, Mousel, and Rogue. I'm sure Rogue is sending the very best wishes to you, David. We have Chris Albert Lee, our executive producer. We have Francis, who is the most handsome cat I've ever seen besides my childhood cat Peanut.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm really taken by Francis.
You are? Wow.
Yeah.
Poor Gerald.
You've made me feel small again, Matt. Also a lot of love for Gerald, but I'm sure even Daryl, upon seeing Francis, would understand. I feel like
Daryl... Francis does take your breath away.
Daryl can appreciate a handsome cat when he sees one.
Yes.
So I think, have I done all the housekeeping? Help me out here, Matt. I'm out of practice.
We can do shout-outs or we can...
Let's give it a whirl. Okay. I like the idea of not having David here to stop, keep my imagination in check.
Okay. Let's see how this goes. We have, well, Bruce, backer number 651.
Absolutely no evidence to suggest that's not Bruce Springsteen.
Correct.
Thank you very much to Bruce Springsteen. We're delighted to have you on board. Thank you, Bruce.
Rachel Poulton.
Hello, Rachel Poulton. I don't know any Poultons. Know lots of Rachels. Rachel from Friends.
Yep.
Rachel Hogenkamp.
Yep.
Thank you very much, Rachel. Rachel Riley. she's called Rachel Riley. I like her. Thank you very much, Rachel, for your support.
And finally, Thomas Matthew Robson.
Oh, there's a lot to get my teeth into there. Matthew is...
Goes without saying.
Your name, my brother's name. These are excellent people. Robson, Tennessee name.
Yeah.
David was commentating with Laura Robson earlier. Very enjoyable stuff. And Thomas, there are lots of... Tommy Paul, I assume is a Thomas. Thank you very much, Thomas, for your support. Thank you, everyone, for your support. I apologise to all three of you that you didn't get David Law in your shout-outs. but, hey, you know, we're going where the wind takes us, and that is where the wind took you today. Get well soon, David. Thank you for listening. Do all the stuff that David would tell you to do if he were here. Subscribe to the newsletter. Definitely do that. Tell your friends. Leave us a review. And we'll see you tomorrow.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.